Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the 21st, welcome to October 21st presentation of the Santa Clarita Valley chapter of the AMD Forum. This morning's topic is USTDA 101, USG Tools to Support U.S. Exporters. I'm Eric Jensen, chairperson of the Aerospace and Defense Forum, the Santa Clarita Valley chapter, and president of Jensen Next Level Consulting. Next slide, please. Who are we? The A&D Forum is a forum to provide a way for those in the aerospace and defense community, and it supports the A&D industry, and it's laid out to communicate information and ideas, collaborate on projects, and develop business with each other. There's 9 chapters. In the absence of a global pandemic, we usually meet monthly in person. Most recent chapter to be part of the A&D Forum is the Ventura chapter. In addition, there is a monthly newsletter, over 230 recordings of chapter presentations and tours of A&D sites. To continue fulfilling our purpose, we plan no less than 3 webinars a month until in-person meetings can be resumed, and we hope to resume in-person meetings early next year. More information can be found at the website, aerospacedefenseforum.org. Next slide, please. Logistics. Please turn off your camera video, mute your audio, and please leave that as is throughout the seminar. All questions are going to be handled through the chat. So if you have a question, please put it in the chat. I will pick it up and gather them at the end and ask the presenters. A recording of this webinar will be posted on the A&D Forum website for download by A&D Forum members. I want to make sure you know that all attendees will receive an email when the recording is available. Likewise, all attendees will receive contact information for all attendees who granted permission. Next slide, please. I'd like to recognize our sponsors this time. The Santa Clarita chapter is sponsored by the Santa Clarita Economic Development Corporation. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Holly, and she's going to give us some background on that. And if we can unmute Holly, please.
Great. Thank you, Eric. Just briefly, Santa Clarita Valley Economic Development Corporation is really pleased to sponsor this chapter of the Aerospace Defense Forum. We look forward to getting back to in-person meetings, hopefully in the new year. Just want to briefly tell you a little bit about the organization, Santa Clarita Valley, located just about 30 miles north of downtown Los Angeles, known as one of the most business-friendly regions in Los Angeles County and in Southern California. We are a award-winning area and well-known for our, you know, recognized for being a good place to live, a safe and healthy place to live, and for being, as I said, the most business-friendly city. Many people don't realize that the city of Santa Clarita, which is the main city in our region, is the third largest city in Los Angeles County, and we are growing. We're probably one of the fastest growing areas in Los Angeles County with new residential units as well as a significant amount of new industrial space that has been coming online over the past several years. We are home to many aerospace companies, which is why we are pleased to support the Aerospace Defense Forum. You can see some of our top employers here, but really an entire range of suppliers in all areas of aerospace and defense. And we're proud to support these companies, not only through the ADF, but also working with them on problem solving for other issues that can affect their growth. Certainly been important to do that over the past 18 months with the pandemic, but also helping them access incentives and programs and resources that can help their businesses grow and thrive. If you have interest about learning more about Santa Clarita Valley or issues, if your business is here that you'd like to discuss with us and see how we can assist in resolving those, please don't hesitate to contact me. As Eric said, you'll get all of our contact information. And again, it's a pleasure for us to sponsor this chapter. And with that, Eric, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you so much, Holly. Holly and her team have done a great job supporting us. In fact, they are running the presentation this morning, and it's a pleasure to work with them. At this point, I'm going to introduce Jillian Forster and Brent Harrison. Jillian is a country manager on the Sub-Saharan Africa regional team at the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, the USTDA. In this capacity, she's responsible for sourcing, developing, and overseeing the successful delivery of the USTDA's programming in energy, ICT, transportation, and other sectors in West Africa. She's also on the agency's ICT sector team and leads the satellite subsector for the USTDA. Before joining USTDA, Ms. Forster worked as a subcontractor providing research and analytical support to the agency's Sub-Saharan Africa team. Her prior professional experience includes working with a think tank and consulting firms in Washington, D.C., focused on private sector development in Africa, as well as 2 years working with a community development organization based in Yi, South Sudan. Ms. Forster graduated honors with an M.A. in International Economics from the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies, as a B.A. in International Relations and Economics from Roanoke College. She is proficient in French and Juba Arabic. Brent Harrison is a country manager for the Indo-Pacific region at the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. In his role, he's responsible for business development, project preparation, management, and supervision of USTDA activities in the region with a focus on healthcare, satellites, smart grid, and emergency communications and infrastructure. Before joining the USTDA, Brent was a director at the CGLA Infrastructure, where he focused on domestic and international infrastructure project identification, development, and advocacy. He started his career in economic research at the Institute of International Finance, primarily focused on global macroeconomics and financial market surveillance. Following that, he joined the World Bank's Development Economics Prospects Group, where he provided analysis on global capital flows, Latin America, and South Asia. He also worked as a consultant for the Growth Dialogue, a DC-based think tank, helping policymakers in the developing world consider relevant policy actions to effectively promote economic growth. Mr. Harrison received his master's degree in international political economy from the London School of Economics, as well as an undergraduate degree from the University of Pittsburgh, where he majored in political science with minors in economics and German studies. I am delighted and thankful to have Jillian and Brent present to us today, and I will turn it over now to both Jillian and Brent. Next slide, please.
Yeah, thank you, Eric, for that introduction. We super appreciate you and everybody involved with the forum for allowing us to present today. And to our private sector partners, I just want to thank you all as well. You're invaluable to USTDA mission, and we look forward to working with you all. So as Eric mentioned, my name is Brent Harrison. I'm the newest country manager in the Indo-Pacific region at USTDA. I'm joined by my colleague Jillian, and I'll let her introduce herself when I turn it over. But my personal portfolio in the Indo-Pacific region, healthcare and smart grid, and perhaps of most use to you would be satellites and emergency communications. But with that being said, we're going to touch on sort of our broader mandate as an agency and some of our focuses. So next slide, please. So just to touch briefly on USTDA's mission, we're the project preparation arm of the U.S. government. We're a demand-driven agency, and what that means in practice is we're able to strategically deploy funds depending on market demands and based on the needs of both the in-country grantees and our private sector partners. We work to support sustainable infrastructure development in low- and middle-income countries. We do not have the ability to work with high-income countries, and then we connect the U.S. private sector to infrastructure projects in those emerging markets. Finally, I'd just like to mention that we kind of have a two-pronged macro consideration when assessing projects that takes roots in our name, trade, and development. So on the development side of things, there needs to be a positive developmental impact for the host country in question, And then on the trade side of things, we promote U.S. company competitiveness, ultimately through exports. And Jillian will touch a little bit more on our grant processes and considerations in a little bit. Next slide, please. So just to provide a little bit of color as to where USTDA fits into the project development life cycle, you know, we projects start with the project concepts from either a country grantee or a U.S. contractor. When we try to create the enabling environment to support the infrastructure project to move forward and to ultimately financing and then implementation. So we aim to create a pipeline of bankable projects, and we're agnostic as to, you know, what type of financing comes after that. But we do, you know, try to create projects for both our public sector partners, the Development Finance Corporation on the USG side of things, XM Bank, but also private sector as well. Next slide, please. So USTDA's tools kind of fall into two broad buckets, the first of which is our project preparation arm, which includes feasibility studies, technical assistance, pilot projects, master plans, FEED studies. And then the second bucket is our partnership building and capacity building tools. So reverse trade missions, conferences, workshops, and some of our training grants. Going back to the project development side of things, I'm sure I'm not enlightening anybody as to what a feasibility study or technical assistance is, but just to briefly mention it, you know, it kind of provides the comprehensive analysis required to move the project from the conceptual stage on through to financing. And then on pilot projects, you know, demonstrating a U.S. technology solution and its effectiveness to once again secure that financing. There's two types of ways and their forms that our grants kind of take when working with our partners. So the first of that I'd like to touch on is our sole source grant activities. This is where a grantee has a preferred U.S. partner, and they come to us with this project concept idea, the U.S. partner. We then develop the terms of reference and the budget with both of them, and there's a cost share component that comes along with this, typically around 50% for the U.S. contractor, and also potential success fee arrangement depending on whether the project is successful and ultimately leads to follow-on procurements. The second type is our competed grant activity, which is where the grantee comes to us without a preferred U.S. partner. So we work with them to develop the terms of reference, the budget, and then put out an RFP that's hosted on the USTDA website for companies to then bid on. There is no cost share component to that, those types of projects. To touch on, you know, our reverse trade missions and workshops, RTMs bring key decision makers and project developers from overseas entities to the United States to learn more about U.S. technology solutions, be connected with service providers, financiers, also policymakers and regulators to learn a little bit more about how we do things in the U.S. And help ultimately develop their infrastructure projects. One final point that I'd like to mention is that these include both public and private sector participants. Next slide, please. So USTDA has five priority sectors. Agribusiness and healthcare were recently elevated as priorities, and that's, you know, it's going alongside our longstanding presence in energy, information communication, and transportation, and a variety of subsectors within those. Next slide, please. So just to touch a bit on our results before turning it over to Jillian, we're super excited about the first figure on the screen there. So for every dollar invested, that's equivalent to $117 of UX exports being generated for the agency. We've supported about 4,000 activities worldwide. That's in 139 emerging markets. Just to highlight again that some of these countries may, you know, now be high-income countries, but that's, you know, since the beginning of the agency in 1992. And then that's resulted in approximately $76 billion in total U.S. exports. So I will now turn it over to Jillian to talk a little bit how to work with USTDA.
Great. Thanks so much, Brent. And just to touch again on that 1 and 117 ratio, we actually just announced that sort of new finding, our monitoring evaluation team announced that it's increased from last year, but the 1 in 117 is basically, as Brent mentioned, for every dollar that we invest in programming through feasibility studies or trade missions or anything like that, has resulted on average leveraging $117 of U.S. exports. So we think that's a pretty good ROI for the U.S. taxpayer. In terms of how to work with USTDA, as Brent mentioned, we're a demand-driven agency. We're what we call a programmatic agency. So we don't develop policy. We do things. And a way to work with us, you know, is even after this presentation, if your company is working in Mexico or you're working in Nigeria or somewhere in the Indo-Pacific, you can reach out to us to discuss maybe a potential project that you're interested in working on. So that's one major way to work with us is to reach out, and we can guide you through how to fill out a proposal and how to work with us and shape, you know, a potential grant activity for a project. The other major way to work with us is to bid on contracts that are posted on our website, or even to bid on RFPs for grants. As Brent mentioned, sometimes we'll work with grantees in the countries where we're active, work with them to structure and fund a feasibility study, and then we'll bid that out for U.S. companies, especially U.S. consulting firms that have sort of that technical, maybe engineering or economic analysis expertise, to carry out, you know, that feasibility study. And one of the major reasons why, you know, we require that U.S. companies complete these studies is that it's more likely that U.S. companies, of course, have linkages back to U.S. suppliers, U.S. OEMs, so that ultimately once the project hopefully moves forward to financing and implementation, it's more likely that a U.S. company will be involved in that project and see sales as a result. So then another way that you can participate and work with USTDA is to you know, be a part of and even listen into some of our workshops or our reverse trade missions or RTMs. We have a number of these events on hold for kind of obvious reasons. It's been challenging for us to carry out in-person events during COVID. But, you know, we have been able to get pretty creative with virtual events as well. And I'll talk through a couple of those examples. And the last thing I'll mention too, if there's anything that you take away from this presentation, I would ask that you go to our website and sign up for our newsletter for updates on events and other opportunities to engage with USTDA. So you can go to ustda.gov, click on how to work with USTDA, and there'll be an opportunity to subscribe. And you can actually subscribe based on the specific sector where your company is focused and then receive updates based on, you know, which activities we have going on, especially in the ICT or satellite subsector. Next slide. So this is a slide on our basic grant eligibility requirements. So there's a couple of basic parameters that are helpful to know. First is the range of the grant size. Our grants are fixed price, so we spend a lot of time working on developing the terms of reference, the budget, and the grants can range anywhere from $500,000 to $1.5 million, just depending on the need of the analysis for this specific project, for this specific project sponsor. In terms of who can apply, as Brent mentioned, typically grantees are, you know, grantees have to be incorporated in the host country, so it can be a Ministry of Communications, or it can be a developer or a government-owned entity, you know, public, private, or parastatal. So they can apply and work with USTDA on a grant, or a U.S. company can come to us with a proposal. But the only thing, and that's very important, is that the U.S. company has already developed a relationship with a partner on the ground and then would work with us in tandem on developing a grant activity. In terms of what we can fund, you know, obviously grants will cover the feasibility study work, the labor, the analysis that goes into, you know, developing a project. You know, and we only work with commercially deployed technologies, so we, you know, don't really fund sort of product development or R&D. And we can also work on pilot projects, as Brent mentioned. If there's a, you know, a U.S. company that's deployed their solution in the United States and Europe, and maybe it's the first time it's being deployed in an emerging market, we're very interested to look into structuring a pilot activity. The only thing is that we cannot fund equipment. So that would be one area where maybe if the U.S. company were interested to cost share, you know, we could look into funding an activity around that and just funding the engineering and analysis around it. And then the last thing, obviously, and that's one reason why we're really interested to speak to this group, is that, you know, all the projects that we support are in sectors where U.S. companies are competitive. we're always looking at projects where, you know, what is the U.S. export angle? So obviously in aerospace and satellites, it's an area where U.S. companies really dominate. So that's, you know, one thing that would make us really interested in leaning into to funding a certain activity. So next slide. Great. In terms of how we evaluate proposals, there's quite a number of factors that go into, you know, how we determine whether or not a grant is competitive for USTDA assistance. And every project is different in every sector and in different countries. But the top thing that we would point to is the strength of the partners. We really want to work with strong partners, you know, in the countries where we're active, but also strong U.S. company partners as well. You know, we're coming in at a very risky stage to fund project prep. And, you know, we want to make sure that we're working with strong partners that know how to drive projects forward and have an implementation track record. The second aspect that we look at is really the type of project. Is this something that's a priority for the host government, or it's really important to, you know, infrastructure development in a certain country? And again, you know, and maybe the satellites or emergency communication sector, this kind of infrastructure is hugely important, you know, in emerging markets. So we do see that there is a strong development impact in those sectors as well. Another thing we'll look at as well is, you know, potential access to financing. Have the project sponsors gotten LOIs or initial interest, or have they done outreach to potential financiers, whether it's, you know, our colleagues at the U.S. Export-Import Bank, the DFC, or, you know, other kind of concessional financiers or even commercial financiers as well. That's something that, you know, we'll try to take a look at as well. Again, U.S. exports, we've already talked about that. The other thing that we'll look at, too, is the stage of the project. Land access, PPAs, that's sort of more relevant for the energy sector. But we want to see that there's been some initial pre-feasibility done, that we're not funding just someone's idea, but something that's been, you know, initially well-developed. And the last thing is the scale of the project. So we talked about that 1:117 ratio. Not every project has to be that size, but if USTDA is funding a $1 million feasibility study, we want to know that the project, in terms of its ultimate CapEx or capital expenditure, is many multiples the size of our assistance, so that we're leveraging potential financing, but also potential exports. So anything that we're looking at, we're hoping that it's going to be a minimum $30 million of CapEx, or even much more, you know, in terms of size, because we do support large-scale infrastructure development. Next slide. Great. Thank you. Just to go through kind of quickly a couple of examples of work that we've done, because a lot of times we can talk to you about how we work and what we support, but I think examples really help to highlight it. One project that we're really excited about, especially in the satellite sector, is this project that we supported several years ago in Azerbaijan. And this is a feasibility study with AzerCosmos. So this is for the launch of their Azerspace 2 satellite. And there are a number of benefits in terms of infrastructure development, technology transfer, productivity improvements, and also, you know, human capacity building for the local project sponsor in Azerbaijan. So just to give a little bit of background, after launching their first satellite in 2009, Azerbaijan's Ministry of Communications and Information Technology, they realized that, you know, demand in country would quickly outstrip capacity. And they actually reached 80% capacity in only 2 years after launching in 2009. So recognizing, you know, the need for broadband services and other things that could be provided, the ministry looked at different options to invest in a second satellite, Azerspace 2. So that's listed on the slide. Before moving forward with, you know, what is a very capital intensive project, they obviously needed some level of independent technical and financial validation of their investment, basically a feasibility study. So USTDA partnered with them, the state-owned satellite company AzerCosmos, and they funded this study. After completing the study, AzerCosmos signed a contract with Space Systems Loral, or SSL, and Intelsat to jointly operate the satellite. So that recognized that resulted in a pretty large sales win for those U.S. companies. Also, of course, the assistance that USTDA funded helped AzerCosmos develop a roadmap for future spending decisions, and they are now implementing a ground control system as well. Overall, now this important infrastructure is in place to drive connectivity in the country and also development in the region. So this really demonstrates sort of the dual mandate of USTDA. Export wins for U.S. companies, but also it's a win-win for AzerCosmos and Azerbaijan. We aren't active in Azerbaijan anymore, but again, it's a really great example that we have in the satellite sector. So next slide. So this is a slide demonstrating that sort of second bucket of tools. In addition to our grant assistance, we also have, you know, these partnership building activities, reverse trade missions, workshops. So the first one listed there, since I cover West Africa, you know, Nigeria is a big part of my portfolio. Actually, about 2 weeks ago, we carried out a workshop as a part of a Nigeria Satellite Technologies reverse trade mission. So this was basically a business briefing, you know, as a part of NigiComSat, which is the state-owned satellite entity in Nigeria. They're looking at procuring new satellites. So we set up an event where the Nigerians could brief and talk about their needs, answer questions to U.S. companies that were attending the event. And then we also set up one-on-one meetings and briefings so that U.S. companies could talk about their solutions. And then the Nigerians could ask and answer questions. It was a really successful, you know, virtual event. It was just a 2 half-day event. And basically, the Nigerians weren't aware of a lot of U.S. solutions in the space, and they were really impressed. So we're really excited about that and hope that the conversations can continue after the event. We still do have funding under that contract to carry out a full in-person reverse trade mission. So we hope to carry that out as soon as it's logistically possible to basically bring the Nigerians to the United States and meet with U.S. companies that can offer services, you know, in the sector. The other activity that we supported relatively recently, we in Latin America and the Caribbean, we supported a digital connectivity workshop training. That was, you know, part of that training was also focused on satellite and wireless communication technologies. Next slide. Great. So the last, you know, set of examples I want to talk about, and I think this would be really relevant for this group and the sector, are our training grants. Our training grants are really sort of specific kinds of tools that are, you know, applicable only in specific circumstances. So if there is a public procurement that a U.S. company is competing on in an emerging market, and there's evidence that maybe, you know, another competing firm that's French or Chinese or Turkish, you know, they're receiving a lot of support from their host countries, USTDA can intervene with a training grant to basically help level the playing field for the U.S. company. Our training grants essentially serve as deal sweeteners whenever a company is competing on a procurement. So to give you an idea of what this looks like in practice, USTDA supported an ICT training grant in the Philippines with Cisco. So basically, Cisco was competing on a procurement. They ended up winning the procurement. So then, you know, because USTDA offered this training that was contingent on selecting the U.S. company, we were able to move forward with providing training focused especially on 5G. So this is one area where, you know, we because we were able to offer this training grant, Cisco was able to win the bid. Another example as well, and this is not in the ICT space, but in my region, it's in the energy sector. There was a deal with Senelec, which is the electrical utility in Senegal, and they were looking at a, you know, multi-million dollar grid expansion project. There are quite a number of companies from China, from Turkey, that were bidding on the project, and there were a lot of sort of backdoor deals and things going on. And the U.S. company, Weldy Lamont, which is a small company out of Illinois, was trying to demonstrate the value of their technology and, you know, trying to compete on this bid. So for several years, you know, we followed the deal and offered a training grant assistance if Senelec were to move forward with Weldy Lamont. And we signed a grant last year to basically provide this training grant assistance. And we're very pleased that, you know, this has resulted in an export win, a sales win for Weldy Lamont as well. So these are examples of how we can use that tool. It's a bit different than our feasibility studies. It's really to support U.S. companies in procurements. And we don't have any examples in the aerospace or satellite sector yet. So, you know, certainly, again, we're demand driven. If there's a project that your company is competing on in a certain market where USTDA is active, we'd certainly be excited to have a conversation with you about that. So next slide. Great. So this is this end of the presentation. Connect with us, follow us on social media. Again, please sign up for our newsletter. We have a number of activities, you know, on our website, procurement opportunities as well that are posted, and they're, you know, always changing, and a lot of things go on during the year. We're a small agency, but we do a lot. So we'd really be interested in, and, you know, making sure that your company can take advantage of some of the tools that we have on offer. Yeah, with that, we would really look forward to taking some of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Jillian and Brent. I have a lot of questions, and there's some questions on the chat. But let's start with, so Peristaltle. Is that what it was? Public, private, and peristaltle. I don't know what that means. In one of your slides.
I'm happy to take that one. So peristatal is basically just a term that means an entity that's partially owned by the state. So in many countries, I think it's less so in the United States. I don't know, Brent, if you can think of some examples. But for example, especially in South Africa, there are quite a number of entities that are they're owned by the South African government, but they're run semi-independently or they're partially owned by the private sector. Okay. So it's just to indicate a different kind of project sponsor that we can work with.
And I imagine that makes it a little more complex.
Yeah, it can make projects somewhat political in that host country. But, you know, sometimes it also comes with the benefit of that entity having financing behind it. So if they're moving forward with a major, you know, transport or other kind of infrastructure project, it means that they have funding, sort of fiscal funding available to finance a deal.
And if the government's very interested in it, it potentially gets greater support because they need it to be successful.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. There are too many examples of that in the United States. It's you know, a bit more there. They can make a bit more strategic investments if there's less of a business case due to other considerations. So, yeah, that's what I would say on that.
Okay. So, and I'm a little fuzzy on a reverse trade mission. So is that when people come here to get information, or could you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah. And I'm happy to take this one, and if Jillian has anything to add, feel free to chime in. But yeah, it's essentially where a group of delegates, so, you know, about no more than 15-ish, come to the U.S. and we take them around to different locations. So, you know, there's one that we're planning that's going to be in Washington, D.C., in Chicago, and then in California. And just have them meet with different companies to learn a little bit more about some of the technologies that they provide, as well as, again, some of the, you know, in the DC context, some policy that's behind it. So it's both the U.S. commercial opportunity and then sort of the technical framework, sort of knowledge building, as well as the business development side of things. But do you have anything to add to that, Jillian?
Yeah, and I would just say, I don't know how many of your group are, you know, work closely with the Commerce Department, but Commerce will carry out what's called trade missions, which is basically when they'll sponsor an event where they'll take U.S. company leaders to a market and, you know, overseas, you know, somewhere in Europe or Latin America or elsewhere. What we do is the reverse, so that's why they're called reverse trade missions. Okay. Yeah, and as Brent mentioned, these are basically like very structured events. You know, if we're aware of a large upcoming procurement in a certain country, what we'll do is organize a delegation of, you know, 12 to 15 decision makers. And these are, you know, not small companies or, you know, minor players in the market. These are ministers. These are procurement officers. We'll bring them to meet directly with U.S. companies and understand more about their solutions. And we will only basically carry these out if we think that there's a really strong sales opportunity, because we know that U.S. companies are busy. So we want to make sure that we're structuring an event that can be valuable. So that's what these entail. And when these are posted on our website, you know, there's always an opportunity to carry out what we call business briefing. So maybe even if your company's not involved in parts of the visit, we always say for the price of a plane ticket, you can fly out to where the business briefing is being held, and, you know, meet directly with some of these decision makers, or even have set up one-on-one meetings as well with some of the delegates that come along with these reverse trade missions.
And to find out about these, you would stay regularly looking at the website.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things on the website right now that say TBD because of COVID. Oh. But again, we're doing a lot of virtual events, so there are a couple of things that we're starting to post, and, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, early next year, middle of next year, we'll really be able to ramp up and carry out some of these events.
Okay, so one of the questions that came through the chat, I had the same question, is, although you said it's commercially available technology, that's what I recall, but from an ITAR standpoint, can you cover a little bit about how that gets handled? If you're exporting information, is there ITAR? How do you make sure there's no ITAR issues? Do you need export licenses? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'll have to say that, you know, I became the subsector lead for satellites about a year ago, and this is something that increasingly comes up. You know, I think it really just depends on the opportunity. You know, we don't have sort of regulations on our ITAR. What we do is help to shape the events or carry out activities that create the opportunity. And oftentimes it's upon the U.S. company to work with ITAR regulations. But again, something that we're interested to explore to make sure that we're building that into our programming. As I mentioned, you know, I was able to provide that example from Azerbaijan and the satellite space, but that's from several years ago. Then we did the Nigeria event too. We're starting to see an uptick. So certainly we'd be interested to hear more from your group as well in terms of what you're seeing in terms of export challenges as it relates to ITAR, because we want to make sure that we're considering that when we shape our events. So I don't know if that's a good answer to the question, but I think that's a really good question and good point.
So I think the answer is that the companies themselves, and they are responsible for ensuring that they are ITAR compliant. And you're putting the opportunities in front of them, but still, if they're going to export anything that is potentially an ITAR issue, they have to make sure that they manage it themselves. So that makes sense. And one of the questions that came through thinking about the aerospace and defense supply chain, you know, what potential opportunities, and the question is, there's a couple of things here. How do they get to business? And I think part of it is you look at the website to understand what is available. You know, certainly aerospace and defense has a lot of commercial aspects that are probably not ITAR, but could be. And so specifically, you know, an A&D company like ours, you know, what do we do? How do we try to match up what we manufacture or what a supply chain has versus what is desired or requested by some of these countries? And does that include, you know, training on continuous improvement or manufacturing or machining? Is that also in the ballpark?
So one thing that I would also add on the ITAR side of things before jumping into this question is we also have a due diligence process with all of our grants. So to ensure, you know, on the grantee side of things in other countries, you know, some of those considerations are handled and when we do a review of both the U.S. contractor and the grantee. In terms of the, you know, manufacturing, we don't typically get involved in projects that are manufacturing focused. Now, there are some nuances that do occur. But in terms of opportunities, I think, you know, one thing that I've noticed in my couple months here at USTDA is it's really useful to just reach out to us and have the initial preliminary conversation so we can understand a little bit better of your business model and needs and then kind of see where potentially that could fit into some of our projects and programs you know, being able to get a better understanding of what the needs are. I think it's a bit hard for me to think through, you know, what exactly how to connect the dots there unless I have a conversation with somebody about where they see opportunities or where they're looking to get involved in. And then, you know, through a lot of those conversations, you know, the market connecting and between the public and private sectors kind of comes together. But do you have anything to add to that, Julian?
Yeah. And the other thing I was thinking about as well with ITAR, I think that could be something that, you know, if we're working with a project sponsor in a certain country, you know, we could potentially build in a task focus in the study, a task focus on ITAR compliance. I think that's something else we could look at too. So just something to think about. All of our, you know, studies, feasibility studies might mean one thing to one person and another thing to a different person, but we can really support anything prior to financial close. So, you know, we can build the study around like what the needs are of the project and also what helps to most benefit U.S. companies that are interested in exporting. So something to think about too. In terms of companies in the A&D supply chain, so if your company isn't maybe directly involved in project development, but you sell into, you know, another company that will experience the broader sales, one thing that we include as a part of all of our feasibility study is a U.S. sources of supply task. So we basically require all of the U.S. contractors that are carrying out the study under a USTDA grant to do this analysis of which U.S. companies can supply into a specific project. So they'll work on developing that. Sometimes they'll do outreach to the U.S. companies to make sure that they're aware of the potential opportunity. And even for a project in the energy sector a couple weeks ago, we supported a webinar for U.S. companies to make sure that they're interested in the project and to make them aware of upcoming procurement opportunities. So basically, this U.S. sources of supply list and you know, this analysis is provided directly to the project sponsor so that they can be aware of U.S. companies in the sector that would be eligible to, you know, to supply into their project. And in that sense, you know, it's an opportunity for U.S. companies in the supply chain to kind of have their name down on that list so that the project sponsor can reach out to them for the sales opportunity.
Okay, so my understanding is part of it is look at the website, understand what's going on, what's available, what the opportunities are, and call you up and say, okay, this is what we have to offer. Does this fit in, not fit in? And then get your name on the list so that when some of these projects come through, you could be listed as a potential source of supply.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing I will say, too, is that we also work really closely with our colleagues at the Commerce Department, and there's somebody that's a POC for the satellite sector. And so sometimes if we're looking for U.S. companies as well, we'll reach out to her, or we'll even reach out to what's called a U.S. Export Assistance Center or a USEAC. So I'm sure there's a USEAC for Santa Clarita or for the L.A. area. And they will, you know, also maintain lists of U.S. companies and be able to work with U.S. companies to get them involved in some of these projects, too. So there's a, you know, we can also connect you to other colleagues also to make sure you're a part of any list and involved in any opportunities as they come up. The other thing I'll mention, and I know this is a lot to throw at the group, but if you go to our website, there's a page that basically you can request past reports that we've completed, public versions of the reports, because sometimes they contain business confidential information. But if you go to the website, there's you can click on a link and it'll show you a list of the reports. And if there's one that you're interested in, you can request a copy of the public version of that report to get an idea of, you know, what the study was and what the opportunity was as well, in case you want an example of some of the work that we supported.
Okay. One of the things that occurs to me, whether it's accurate or not, is to some degree what you are doing and your agency is doing is helping us around the world, you know, internationally. It's diplomatic in some respects, where we're helping other countries that are lower income or less fortunate. So I think it's part of the overall United States, helps the stature in the world by helping these other countries. I don't know if that's something that's woven through your agency or thought about or talked about.
Yeah, we are technically a foreign assistance agency, but we are different from other foreign assistance agencies that, you know, you may be aware of, and that we do support, you know, this with this dual mandate U.S. exports. But as I mentioned with, you know, the Azerbaijan example, we think it's a win-win. You know, if we're going to a local entity, you know, they have limited resources to spend on very expensive infrastructure projects to help, you know, their population. So, you know, sometimes this project prep funding or feasibility study funding isn't available. So we'll provide that assistance. But at the same time, you know, we think that U.S. companies have the best solutions on offer, you know, for long-term investments. So we'll, you know, work on structuring our activities to make sure that U.S. companies can compete. But also, you know, we think that U.S. companies have the high quality solutions that are most applicable in many of these countries. You know, sometimes it'll be the case in emerging markets where, you know, fiscal considerations are very challenging. And maybe they'll go with the low cost solution because they're not looking at the life cycle cost of these investments. So our assistance is sort of to help them better understand the solutions on offer, but also to make sure that when they're making these investments, they're going to last for a long term, they're going to meet their needs and be high quality. Hopefully that makes sense. I don't know, Brent, if you have something else to add too.
Yeah, one thing that came to mind as we've been talking through some of the questions is we also do a lot of work on standards and market entry issues in specific countries. So in the Indo-Pacific, for example, we have the Indo-Pacific Standards and Technology Cooperation Program that we source sort of a lot of the topics from private sector to hone in on, you know, some of the issues that they're facing. Another one that I'd like to, you know, highlight a little bit on is our global procurement initiative. And I know, again, this is adding to the amount of information that we're throwing at people, but this was launched in 2013, and it's aimed to educate public sector officials in emerging markets on procurement practices and not always going with the lowest bid and kind of integrating life cycle cost analysis and best value determination into their procurement practices. So outside of our project preparation arm, you know, these are the types of activities that we're focused on in terms of standards and market entry problems and harmonizing, you know, market entry opportunities with how we do things in the U.S.
So, Brent, does that fall within like a training grant as an example?
It's actually slightly separate. So it's a bit more of a workshop series. Okay. So we'll have, you know, a group of events focused on, you know, specific subsectors. And then we'll develop the agenda and some of the topics, again, engaging with our partners both in the public and private sector as to what should be focused on and what we should talk through and then host an event to you know, share thoughts and policy frameworks.
I mean, that sounds like something that the aerospace and defense companies could participate in, because procurement is, as an example, is an extremely important aspect of what we do.
Yeah, and I, you know, these are, again, the type of conversations when talking, if anybody has, you know, an issue that they've run into when trying to work with a foreign country, you know, letting us know about it is the first step to being able to develop these type of workshops you know, honing in on what needs to be addressed and how we can help. So I encourage anybody who has, you know, faced any issues on this front to reach out to us. To let us know what the issue was, and then maybe we can kind of take the conversation moving forward, because we develop these things, again, on a demand-driven basis.
And I have one more, actually many more, but I've only had time for one more. So for the countries and areas you represent, you could help companies understand, you know, what the ground rules are to some degree and how to work with those countries.
Yeah, I mean, all of our country managers are regionally focused. So, you know, and Brent and I, we wear two hats. So we, you know, I cover West Africa, he covers Indo-Pacific, but we also are on sector teams. But, you know, since I do cover West Africa issues on a day-to-day basis, I do have, you know, relatively strong understanding of some of the market entry issues. But again, you know, if you're interested in working in a certain market and you're facing challenges, we don't know about it unless, you know, a company raises it to us. Right. You know, we can also connect you again, you know, with our colleagues at the embassy and point out that, hey, you know, we understand that X company is trying to compete on this opportunity or is trying to work, you know, in a certain country, and we can try to help move those issues along and sort of unstick them. Yeah. And again, as I mentioned, that's one reason why we did want to talk about the training grant tool, because it's one thing that not as many companies know about, but we want to make sure that the folks are aware that is a tool in our toolbox that we can use to assist to help U.S. companies win procurements.
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, I would just say if there's an issue or problem that it falls maybe a bit outside of USTDA's mandate or purview, we probably know somebody who can help sort through the problem. So we're happy to connect the dots on that front as well. So that's just a little piece to add at the end.
Excellent. Well, I don't see any more questions. Jillian and Brent, thank you so much for putting the time in and putting this together and educating us, especially me, apparently. We appreciate your insights, and it's really interesting. It's an aspect that I wasn't aware of what our government does. So again, thank you so much. And a recording of this webinar is going to be on the A&D forum, and under presentations, it's going to be available to all the A&D members, and all attendees will receive an email when the recording is available, along with the contact information for the attendees that gave permission. So upcoming, October 28th, we've got A&D Industry from the Middle Market Viewpoint, Alex Krutz, Managing Director, Patriot Industrial Partners. That's a national online forum. And on November 11th, Spaceport America, Fits and Starts, Scott McLaughlin, Executive Director of New Mexico Spaceport Authority, and that's sponsored by the Los Angeles chapter. Let's see. What's our next slide here? Maybe the end. Oh, nope. Individual membership. Yes, how to join. $350 a year. You get free attendance at all the Indy Forum meetings and webinars. If you're not anywhere near one of those operating chapters, the membership is free. And Jillian and Brent, as a thank you for their presentation, will become members for a year. So they're going to have access to over 250 chapter and webinar presentations, including this one, available for download by forum members. You can join the mailing list of any chapter for free. Also provide you monthly A&D newsletters. Oh, let's see. We're heading the wrong way here. Here we go. If you need more information, go to the andforum.org. The website is listed below. And if you want to sponsor or create a chapter, that would be terrific. If you want to present or have something at a chapter you'd like, let us know. So with that, we're going to wrap it up again. Thanks to Jillian and Brent and Holly and the SCV EDC and Scott for sponsoring this today and handling logistics. Everybody have a great and safe day and wonderful weekend. Take care.